Hi, hello lovely women, lovely people in the gathering. We're here today, it's Monday, for a Moon Diaries report, which is super cool. Sam and I actually spent about an hour after the moon circle last night talking until I think it was about 10:30. We just have so much to talk about right now, which is really cool. So we decided at very late last night that we would come on today and continue our conversation, which is going to be really fun. So let me just bring Sam on. And hopefully our technology is behaving itself today.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Oh, great.
It looks just a bit pajamas. Maybe I kind of am, but not.
I actually meant to put on my big hoodie, which is like my favorite thing to wear, but I left it upstairs. Yeah. It's a rainy day. Is it raining there?
It's just snuggly. Do you know what I mean? It's a snuggly day. It has been a bit rainy. It's not rainy right now, but it's a snuggly day. And so I was like, no, I'm going to stay snuggly.
Yeah, me too. And how lucky we are that we can do that and still get on with our day.
Totally lucky. Yeah, I know. I love it. It's so good. Yeah, it's so good. So good. Good. I sort of heard you as I was trying to come on saying about us being up late last night.
Yeah, so I was just dobbing us in that we stayed up until 10:30 last night, I think, because we were just so high after the moon circle. And this is just a lot to talk about, and that we might just continue our conversation. Mm. I don't really know where that left off, but I know there's a lot of really cool things to talk about right now.
Should we do a couple of minutes? We could do a couple of minutes of the breath that we did last night.
Yes.
Mm. Because that was quite good. And actually why it was quite good is it was a meditation. And for those of you that weren't on the moon circle last night, it was a meditation to clear the mind. So it's like a clearing meditation. And it actually says you should only do it for 3 minutes. And then you should build up, like add 1 minute as you go, once you become proficient enough in it. So we can just do this just for a few minutes, just to bring us into a state of balance and empty out, I don't know, the chatter from other stuff. So you're going to take your ring fingers and bring them in, and you're going to cross them so that the pads of the ring fingers are touching, and then the other fingers are just, other fingers are just settled. It's a bit of a weird mudra, but once you get it, it feels good. And then that's just going to rest gently in front of the heart. And then all we're going to do is we're going to use the mantra, so, 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 hung, 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 hung. And on the inhale, you're going to mentally vibrate, so, 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 as you sniff the breath in. And then on the exhale, you'll mentally vibrate, hung, 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 as you sniff the breath out. Now, the only important thing I just want to say is you want to have a full release of the breath at the end. It's quite easy when you're pushing the breath out through the nose to suck breath in at the same time. So you've got to really focus on your emptying everything out. So we want to fill everything up and empty everything out. So I think we'll just do this for 3 minutes and just I'll time us so we get there. And we'll just drop into the stillness of this. These next 3 minutes. Okay. So just take a deep breath in. You can go at your own pace or stay with me. And exhale. And then we'll begin. Inhaling deeply. Pausing with the breath, feeling the fullness of the breath. And exhaling. And just relaxing the hands for a moment. And just sitting in the stillness. And the clarity of your mind. Yeah.
Magic, I'm all tingly.
Yeah, it's really, I was thinking, oh, I could just sit and be still for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it's meant to do. So that's really, it's a really nice meditation. Just 3 minutes to do that.
I think it's really powerful, like these 3 minute pranayamas meditations. When we're working in stressful environments, like before we sit down to work or halfway through the day or before going back to work after lunch, is like just 3 minutes of doing that actually really helps bring the adrenaline down and
I don't even think, I mean, to be honest, it doesn't need to be if you're in a stressful situation. I think everyone could benefit from thinking, could I potentially set my clock and do this at this point in the day, just to have that reset, or from the process of doing one thing to another. A lot of the time, I don't think we mark the end of one thing and the beginning of the next thing. Mm. We kind of everything just roll in, which is why actually we end up not being very present in our conversations.
Mm. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. But I was just sort of thinking, like, if it's a working day, like if you're at work, particularly once we've become addicted to adrenaline, we kind of wake up just wanting to get into the day sometimes, or wanting to get into the work. And it's, yeah, about creating that ritual of pause before getting into it or completing it before going to lunch. I was just thinking about that in relation to how it is that I tend to work. I'm usually so excited to get into all of the work, but actually that's potentially the rush of the adrenaline that comes with the stress of the work day. So, and this is just one of those really powerful, what conscious breath work helps to do, is still have the energy to do the work without chasing the rush of the adrenaline.
Mm. Mm. I think as well, what's really powerful about that particular meditation is its capacity to clear the mind. So again, I do believe that, yeah, I agree with what you're saying about the adrenaline rush, but it's that we are consistently taking our past into our future. And we actually need to, yeah, become more aware of doing that, because it's that tends to cause the conflict or the arguments or the just not really being present. And whether that's at work or at home, doesn't really matter. Mm. But that's where we make those errors, or we do something that we then go, gosh, I wish I hadn't said that. Mm. they come from not having the capacity to pause and observe. And we can really hone a more clarity of the mind by emptying the mind of previous chatter. So it's kind of exactly that, whether it's however you need to use it for. But sometimes there is a real need to clear something that we've just been doing that could be like a bit yucky or stressful. And many different pranayamas will help with that. Alternate nostril breathing is probably one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Really for creating a new state of equilibrium. Mm. Mm. So good. But yeah, great meditation, and I think after doing 3 minutes of it, you do find that you are clear.
For sure.
But even contemplate, if I had to make a big decision, I think this is one I contemplate this a lot. A lot of people are struggling with not knowing what choices to make. You know, we're always, phoning a friend to ask, should I do this? Which is lovely, but the friend is only going to tell you something from their own truth, and which is always loaded with their own memories and fears, etc., etc. So, what we actually need to do is find that clarity and then sit with getting back in touch with what I actually feel in that moment, and then starting to trust that. So breaths like this are kind of a very good way of reconnecting to your intuition. So,
Well, here we are. It's Monday. It's a moon day.
It's a moon day. We talk about the moon, which is really good. And we're going to talk about, let's talk about this full moon that we've just had yesterday at whatever time it was, 1:20 in the afternoon, because we're still really in that energy and it was so beautiful and bright this morning. I know you talked about it on the Moon Circle last night, but just, let's just explain the, why we think it's in Scorpio. Because it is.
Well, it was last night when it went full. I checked it out this morning, and as of now, the moon has now transitioned into Sagittarius, or is transitioning. Maybe it's void of course right now.
Maybe.
But as of it was at a approximately 1:40 p.m. yesterday afternoon that the moon went exactly full, and that occurred right on the heart of Scorpio. So there's a photograph of what that looks like on the Aquarian Age Astrology Instagram page. This beautiful big full moon, really just filling up the heart cavity of the Scorpio constellation. And at the heart of the Scorpio constellation is one of the fixed royal stars, Antares. And you could and they were just like right, the moon and Antares were just like right, completely there, overlapping. And this is astronomically, this is called a conjunction, when you have the two bodies that are within 10 degrees of each other. But when they're right on top of each other, it's just undeniable there is a relationship happening there, a cosmic relationship and a filtering of the cosmic light codes that come from that. And so and what it is to know and to understand about the four fixed royal stars is that they make a square within which our solar system sort of orbits. And whenever we're aspecting one of these fixed royal stars, there's real great influence for really big stuff, for lack of a better word right now. The royal courage and that, like that, even just that idea of royal, like royalty, brings up all kinds of different feelings. But the Antares star is very much related to aspects that we need to draw power from for great courage to make great change. It's also an energy that we draw from that gives us the wisdom and the insight, the sight, the capacity to see what makes sense to us And then to have the courage to not waver from that because other people can't see it. So sometimes we'll say, oh, and this is that, like that beautiful blog post, Sam, that you put up about the emperor's new clothes, is just that little boy was standing there going, he's naked, and everyone else was not seeing that, and he was undeniable in his truth that the emperor was naked. And we talked about this on the moon circle last night. I kind of like mentioned it briefly. Copernicus, this is really very much, I think, the epitome of the Antares energy that we can derive from it, is the undeniable truth that you can see, and then your commitment to that. So Copernicus was an astronomer, and he was the first, or he was one of the first people to prove that the Earth rotated around the Sun, not the Sun rotating around the Earth. And he was also one of the first scientists to prove that the Earth was round. And so, could you imagine being a part of a civilization that believes that not only is the Earth flat, but that the Sun rotates around it? And then you stand there and you say, actually, this flat thing that we live on is round, and we are traveling around a great ball of fire in the sky. Like the courage that it takes to say something like that, and then to believe it, and then to put the science or the language to help other people to understand, and then to see it. And it took hundreds of years for that to actually fully become the truth for everybody. And this is a frequency that we have right now with this full moon star, is what is being illuminated, that you can actually finally see, that you have the courage to see undeniably. And do you have the courage to stay true to your convictions rather than being persuaded by what the collective might be believing? It's pretty cool.
It's more fascinating because there are people that would argue with you that the Earth is still flat.
Is still flat. Exactly. But that's exactly it. There's always going to be, well, and there's more than two sides to that story. So, and that is such a cool point, because fundamentally there's going to come a moment where you have to choose what you believe for you. And we can choose to believe that we're on a round thing spinning through the sky, or you can choose to believe that it's flat. Doesn't matter, because it's just going to make up your reality. But if we bounce between what other people think, well, then you're not going to be living in a truth or in a very peaceful or harmonious way.
I know this is not on topic, but I think it's still an interesting conversation for us to have. Yeah, when we go into these places of these types of conversations, sometimes I find myself asking why it's relevant. I really have those moments because for me, ultimate peace comes from, I can see and I understand that ultimate peace comes from the present moment and an understanding or a capacity to sit deeply in what is. So when we find ourselves in these sort of moments of sort of looking at things like, these debates over is the earth round or is it flat and, all those different things and contemplating concepts or not even concepts, but the meaning of things like royal stars. My question sometimes, I sometimes wonder, yeah, why, what is the purpose in doing that? I know you have a theory on the purpose of we have so much time on this planet and we need to fill it with something. And I kind of get that, but it's just an interesting one for me because when you're saying what you're saying just now, my deep thing becomes, I keep coming back to this distraction that I see us all going into. We're so easily distracted. And you're right, we're distracted from our own truth, but we're so easily distracted by so many things. Anyway, it's a pondering I have that Where does true peace come from? Does it come from endlessly searching, or does it come from the present moment? And, you know.
Well, I think that the key is the key to, I think, the union of both of our ideas around this is that at some point we're going to have to make a choice. Do we make a choice based on our fears and based on the fact that I'm just going to do what I've always done? Or do we make the choice based off of the neutral mind and my capacity to see alternate pathways, alternate realities, alternate truths? Do I stay to the truth that I've always lived because that's all I know and that's safe? Or do I have the courage to be able to see other options and therefore I can make a choice that is balanced? And I think when we, I mean, yeah, going to an example about the Earth and the solar system, like we're talking about what's our perception of reality, and that's massive, but it can be very simple as the mechanisms of your everyday life. And so what is the reality of your everyday life? And if everything is well, and if you've got peace and you're happy and you're content with how things are going, well then there's no problem. But sometimes something crosses our path that shakes us up and we go, wow, that's wild. I wonder what kind of, like the thing you sent me this morning, Elizabeth April, talking about the moon. Like, again, this is another concept that's going to, you know, it's an altered reality philosophy. And it's a philosophy that's out there that many people talk about, that the idea that the moon is not an asteroid or a rock, that it's actually a manufactured satellite. And it's just like, okay, what good is it going to be for us to think like that about the moon? Until one day something might happen where it's like undeniable the truth. But if we just want to see what it is that we want to see, then we're not going to have the capacity to actually see the reality that's in front of us. Now, I'm not saying that the moon is a satellite, but I'm saying these are areas in which you can practice seeing alternate sides of the story without needing to judge either side of the story until you need to make a choice. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes. I find that moon thing interesting. But I've and partly I still feel things like that can be a distraction. And I understand that we do need to maintain the capacity to be open-minded. And being open-minded is a really good gift, especially if you have children.
100%. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I shared it with you, but I had this really lovely conversation with a lady that I'm friends with up here on the mountain, and she's in her 70s and she has grandchildren, and you know, it's her belief that it's her generation that has ruined the world, that the baby boomers are the ones that are responsible for consumerism and all of it. And actually my father-in-law as well has shared something, like he feels really deeply responsible for the mess that we're in, you know, the perceived mess of the environment, the mess that we're in with the economy. Like, and it's very interesting to think about that, because here we've got, you know, an aging population of people who are feeling like they've ruined the planet, and then what Regina was saying to me. She's like, I'm so terrified that I don't think that my grandchildren have what it takes to clean up the mess that we made. And the reality is that maybe it's not a bigger mess as what we think it is, as what she thinks it is, but she sees a mess where her children and her grandchildren are coming through with so much innovation and creativity, and that the way that they see the world is very, very different to the way that she sees the world. And there's a gap, there's a divide between the generations. And this is very much indicative of, I think, the theme of this full moon as well, is that if we are able to just move, continue to move forwards with love and with hope and with optimism and with that capacity to imagine, then everything is only going to turn out okay. But it's the moment we shut down the imagination, like it's the moment that that older generation shuts down the imagination of the children. And the children say, well, we can do it like this. I don't need to go to school, or I want, or, and there are going to be obvious ways in which we're going to navigate the current systems. Current system of education, the current systems of finance, the current systems of the orchestration of the Western world, because it's not necessarily manifesting in health and well-being for the majority of the population. And it's going to be the generations coming through that will make changes to those systems. But how much are the older generations going to be happy for those systems to change? And so that is a mechanism of sight, of being able to see through what it is that is stable and trustworthy, and to embrace change without fear that it's all going to fall apart.
So when people are going through that, they are taking something that's on a micro level and applying it to the macro. And ultimately, that level of guilt will be a guilt based on something to do with the way in which they have raising their families, which then it's much easier to project out into a worldly, our generation. Of course, it always comes back to a sense of self. And so in that, there's that the level of guilt, the level of shame, that degree there, that's important, because we all need to take responsibility on that micro field, because we can't sit in that space of feeling the guilt for the collective, when actually the only thing that we can truly make any difference to is this present moment and what's in front of us. And so that's really, it's just an interesting, just listening to you talk about that. I feel like we need to be aware of how, where we do this in our lives, where we will take something and just put that out into a generational sphere, because that ultimately takes some of the blame away from us. And there'll be something anyway. I can understand how that is, but because obviously each generation is just doing the best that they can, given with the tools that they have. So it's really important that we never really look back and blame, because they just did the best that they could with the tools. It may not be the best thing, but they did what they needed to do. And then it's very hard for us to look into the future, because we have no idea what it is that we are going to have, what knowledge we're going to have, what concepts we will have been created that will make shifts. And that's why it's actually just most important to be very clear and present in the now, with your, going back to what you were kind of saying before, but with your, with the actual deep knowing that comes from having made time to sit with yourself in everything, without being so heavily influenced. because everyone is, this is kind of what I'm saying. It's like, even from, we talk about astrology, and you and I are very, we're doing, you know, real sky astrology. But it's so easy to get caught up in other stuff. There's so much, even if you look at the real sky, there's people talking about different things. But that's where I come to on some of this, because obviously the creation of the Royal Stars was based on, I think it was actually a Greek philosophy, and I remember I read about it, and I was just contemplating how those stories have influenced how it is that we're seeing those Royal Stars, and are those Royal Stars actually present for us now? Anyway, this is very, I find it all very, very interesting. And I think it's part of what this full moon is about, because ultimately this whole moon cycle has been about getting clear on what is true for you. And that is incredibly hard when there is so much noise and so many people kind of vying for your attention, saying, I've got the answers. I've got the answers. This is the way to freedom. The moon's not real. Whatever, you know, it's like there's so much. And so it's so incredibly easy just to overwhelmed. Then we get into that state of cold depression, which of course we've talked about. I don't know if we've really talked about it a lot, but this state of cold depression is the state of absolute overwhelm, where there's just too much in the system and the system cannot cope with anymore. And so rather than actually being able to practice discernment, we become numb and void and unable to make any true choices. So therefore we don't make any decisions, and we're just sleepwalking.
I think it's really important that we are taking time each day to check in on the emotional landscape, particularly if there's been a conflict or if something's happened and the situation hasn't quite gone the way that you want, or even it's just the end of the day. Like, we just don't stop enough to actually take an inventory on what the emotional landscape is. And it's a really important skill to have, is to be able to start to remember how to feel, and how to feel the whole landscape of the emotions that are available to the human being. And because what happens is, when we're on the trajectory towards cold depression, we have just started to systematically shut down feelings. And then it's a journey to getting back. We have to feel the feelings. We have to feel the feelings. So, yeah. And that feels like a lot. Like that can feel like a lot to do, and a lot to feel, particularly if, for, you know, if you've been for months or years of setting your feelings aside, setting your desires aside, setting your needs aside. It's just training the body to not, and training the emotional systems to not feel what it needs to feel, because we've got a plan, we've got to get through the day, we've got to get through this, we've got to get from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, and then we go to sleep, and then we get up, and we've got to do it again. And so we're just running on this mental program, and the emotions aren't having an opportunity to fully express themselves. And it's a very human being is a very complex organism. Yeah, and I mean, in the teachings of Kundalini Yoga, you know, it's said that this will be one of the greatest epidemics that we'll see of this age. is called depression. And so it's probably just worthwhile just thinking, like, how am I today? And
Just feel it. Don't think it.
yeah.
Yeah. The big point of that is that we override that because of the fear of what others will think if we're truthful about what the feelings are. And this is something that will be created through early childhood when you're told, you don't need to cry, stop crying, or you're told not to be silly, or you're told many other things, and you will all have our own stories that create memories, which then create a block in the system. And so, as we know with the body and that wonderful book by Bessel van der Kolk with The Body Keeps the Score, and the way that we release trauma, we need to, everything is held within us, but it's the capacity to listen to someone and notice how you are responding on a physiological level to the conversation that you're having, that will start to, and listening to that, that will start to make the biggest changes. Because for the most part, we're not doing that. First of all, we're not really listening. We're actually thinking of what needs to come next, rather than being very present in the moment with the other. That's very common. Or we're actually in something, we're worried about what we just said.
Yes.
Actually contemplating, God, why did I say that? Now they're not really, but we're not listening to what they're saying. And therefore we miss the ability to actually check for the body cues, and the body cues, which really are feelings, which is why they become senses, or in terms of women, sentiences, I mean, and men too, but and that's why they don't work, because we don't use them correctly. And when we do feel them, when we get that feeling of this is not right, we are too attached to worrying about what will happen if we speak our truth to the other. So we don't speak our truth, which overrides the body system. And so if we think about the body as a very complex and, well, I mean, the ultimate computer mechanism, we're consistently overriding that system, and it causes there to be a confusion in the motherboard. And then it can't work properly. And that's what happens when we hit these points of cold depression, absolute depression, when we have extremes where we find that the body isn't working in the way that we want it. These are all states that have come about from that suppression of the emotions. And if, I mean, why else would we have a body if not to feel? Why else would we have it? There is a beautiful practice, actually. It reminded me of it. And my teacher Suraj was talking about this. It's a, I don't know if it's a Buddhist practice, but also Amma, the hugging saint. She talks about this too. And that's where, at the end of the day, so when we do sadhana at the morning, and we use sadhana to help clear the mind. It's kind of like brushing your teeth. And so we brush the mind in the morning so we can start with a clear day, just like that breath we did at the beginning of this. But then at the end of the day, you can also do a practice where you take 10 minutes and you sit down and you replay all of your day. And as you replay the day, you become aware of those things which didn't quite go the way that felt good for you. And rather than just mulling the moment over or getting caught up in the story of it, what you actually do is you take note of it, and then you replay it in your mind in a way that makes it better. So you effectively say, you send telepathically your apologies to the person if you feel that you wronged them, and you redo that process in your mind. You set an intention for how you wish that that had gone differently. And in doing so, you clear those emotional baggage patterns from your system before you go back into your sleep in the evening, which is really powerful because then it's not going to be placed into that subconscious mind.
Yeah, it's a really cool practice.
And so
It's
I've
kind of like a
enjoyed.
do-over. Kind of like a do-over.
Yes. And it also just stops this. I feel like one of the things we really have to understand, and this is why this, I do believe that this full moon is really powerful for this, because full moons are about releasing and letting go. And so this is kind of the ultimate releasing and letting go daily program. And the point of this is we can spend days mulling over something. I don't, how much of, if I contemplate how much of my life, certainly when I was younger, you know, when I was all caught up in boyfriends and stuff like that, just how much of my life was entirely wasted over just going over and over a scenario. It's wild.
And it takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
We're actually using so much energy to be reliving. Because you're reliving it in your mind, in your mental landscape, and then you're reliving it in your emotional landscape. And that takes a massive amount of energy. And then if you do that long enough, well, you create a pattern and a habit.
And how many times do we do that? You know, we believe someone wronged us. We're right, they're wrong. And it becomes a, it's like a, we can get very addicted to that. And so the pattern becomes addictive. And then we talk to a friend and they go, wow, that's awful. I can't believe they did that. It's like we feed off this energy and literally we're just losing days of our lives. Being in other people's business. And what's
Yeah.
fascinating, that person that did that to you is probably not even thinking about you. They probably couldn't care less. They've probably forgotten. And you are still holding this energetic cord like a, you know, around your neck almost like I just, you know, and then they did this and then they did that. You know, it's just, it's absolutely fascinating. And it comes from, it just comes from not being able to take control of the way in which we are processing our thoughts. It's not to say people are not going to wrong you. I mean, I, you know, that's not, you know, you can't, you can never control what other people do. But it's actually, you know, my teacher Guru Das would always say, you can always speak your truth and say to others what you need to say. The key is that you must not be doing it and expecting them to respond in a certain way. You have to release all expectation of what the other says. So whatever is my truth is my truth. However you respond to that, that's your truth and actually none of my business. It's like
Yeah.
ultimate sovereignty.
It is ultimate sovereignty, and it's quite a special relationship when you can have that with someone.
We should have it with everyone.
Yes. Yes.
So,
Yeah.
all star, interestingly, talking about ultimate sovereignty, that's kind of could be one of the things, especially with Scorpio, because it's in the center, it's said to be at the heart of Scorpio. And Antares is, it's connected to Aries, it's meant to be connected to, because Mars is the ruler of Scorpio. And so this Mars energy that Antares connects to, so it's kind of like the god of war, if you see what I mean. And Antares, they're like a sort of, I don't know, I don't know, it's brother and brother or something like that, but they kind of like sit on that same kind of plane. I'm gonna talk about it.
Yeah. Well, the way I the, I think much of the same, the way I see it is they're just like two brothers on a battlefield with opposing views.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
so the point of it is that when it comes down to the heart of the matter, it's getting into the and Scorpio is about the depths, the places no one wants to go. That's why when we have these full moons, it's why it feels quite dense. It's why it feels quite deep. It's why our conversation right now is not like, oh, this is so happy and jolly. It's like a deep conversation. And the point is, there are times to go into the depths. There are times to go to the underworld and actually explore those. And this is one of those points, because most of the things that we struggle with in this world are things we don't want to talk about. Actually, all of the issues that we generally have are things that we don't want to talk about. And we make them out to be way worse than they actually are. So in this scenario, if there are two warlords with opposing views and they're both at loggerheads, both as strong as each other, then what will happen? Well, one of them will have to die, or both of them will die. That's kind of what we do with ourselves. And so at some point, we have to come to peace with this inner war. And the inner war comes when we are conflicting our own personal truth with what's being presented to us, because we feel that's what we should do. And then from there, this is where we come into all sorts of things. We become depressed, we become resentful, we become angry, or Ultimately, I believe that one of the things that is being shown to us during this current full moon cycle from that last new moon cycle is that as women, we need to start truly contemplating what our actual truth is, not the truth that we have been really fed for so long. Especially our generation, we're a generation that was told, okay, yes, you don't have to be tied to the kitchen sink. You can be everything. And I was just actually saying to someone this morning, feminism really has been the downfall of women. I still struggle to see where it is beneficial.
I think it, I also feel that. And I think if we look at feminism like a pendulum, there was a point where women were feeling so suppressed and silenced that they had to take a stand, and then the pendulum started swinging, and now the pendulum has swung to where it's now detrimental at the other side, and there will be a swinging back.
But it's interesting because I saw when I was reading the write-up for the retreat that we're running, that first quote there, which is a quote from the teachings, talks about that effectively woman, I can't remember the wording of it, but woman is what creates man. Are you going to find it?
The molder.
The molder. Yeah. Now, to me, this is the beginning of the lie. What had made women think they didn't have a voice?
Shall I read it?
Yeah.
It says, "Woman is the molder. You are the molder of time, space, and of man. The man of tomorrow, the child, the man of today, the husband, and the men of yesterday, the ancestors. The entire society, in theory and reality, is based on the spirit of a woman."
So my point here, I'll just say that again, is who told us that we actually didn't have a voice? When our voice, in fact, our emotions, as well as our voice, is the first thing that any human born of us will experience. So before they even hear the voice, the child experiences the mother's emotions. In hormones and so therefore we have the ultimate voice. We have the ultimate voice. But we somehow became powerless, which was not true. I mean, we wanted to vote. Which it's massive, and but what I'm trying to say is, I can easily go onto the scale of yes, I can see that women should have the same rights as men, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, we're all continuing along that. There's the concept that we should all be equal is a continuing thing that is played out in humans, all types of humans. I think if we look into nature, you can see that there isn't really any other population of animal that sees every single one of these as equal. Which species is all equal? They have pecking orders, they fight for it. They have roles as women, roles as men.
I don't think it started with wanting. I don't.
I'm going to the vote for women. Do you know what I mean? That's where my brain is
No,
right now.
I know. Yeah, because that was a.
Go
I
on.
think that was a pathway where power could be reclaimed easily because that was a linear. Where my mind goes when I reflect over the history of feminism. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
What were we going to say?
Which trials? I then went to which trials?
Well, there's that. And I have something to say about that too. But I think that there came a point where, and I don't want to broad stroke this statement because I know it's not true of all men historically, but there came a point where women felt owned by the man, not respected by the man, where the and that's where the fight for equalities come from. It's not that women want to do everything that men are doing. It's that we want to be respected for what it is that we do, and that has become obscured over history. And it's really interesting because we could say this as much of women as we could of men. And this is what I want to say about the witch trials, which is really, really fascinating, is there were just as many men that were crucified, not necessarily burnt at the stake like witches, but they were definitely staked for their beliefs over time because it didn't fit in the narrative of whatever the civilization was at that point in time. And so there was just as many men that were historically judged and crucified for their beliefs because they were revolutionary to the narrative. Like, as women, we kind of go, witch trials, we've always been suppressed, but in actual fact, it is not isolated to the feminine for the suppression of the voice. What we have done a really good job of suppressing, and this again comes round to the theme of this full moon, is whenever there is a revolutionary idea, it comes with change, which we're afraid of because what we have is familiar and therefore safe. And so all of the people throughout history, and this is what science is revealing right now, like there's so much work in the realms of quantum mechanics and the understanding of the universe and space and time and our atomic makeup is these are all things that have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, but we had scientists that were crucified, like male scientists that were crucified for daring to suggest things that are now being proven because we've got the tools to be able to see it. And it's like it's in our ignorance that we're happy to crucify someone else because it means that we're safe in our beliefs. And we
Yeah,
just
so
do that to each other. We're just doing that to each other. And so, yeah, it's like really, it's so, just one of those things. It's infinitely simple to say, and it can, and then somehow gets infinitely complex to break down. But can you receive what someone else is saying without judging them? Can you receive what you, when your friend calls you and says, I've got this problem, I've got this problem, I've got this problem. Can you receive what they're saying without judging them?
yeah, and I mean, yeah. So the easiest thing there is to be able to inquire about that. And though if you find yourself struggling with answering that question, then what you have to know is that we are never actually judging the other, we are judging ourselves. So the truth is that those people that struggle with judging people are actually judging themselves. And this is the way to find clarity on this, is to recognize that whatever it is that you're doing to the other, you are in fact doing to yourself. And so, this is why, the responsibility always comes back to self and comes back to us. We will always want to blame others, and we can say, but we need to stop judging our own thoughts. We need to stop judging our own feelings. We need to stop denying our own feelings and denying our own thoughts. And once we do that, we will have no judgment on anyone else. And so it's kind of, well, it might even be easier to start the process of contemplating, could I just stop judging another? But the truth is, if you want to really do the work, you need to sit with yourself and inquire of yourself.
And I just want to bring this back around to the feminism thing, maybe before we close off this conversation, because this is a big, it's a, it's, these are a lot of, these are all very big, deep topics. Is what we're witnessing in the pendulum swinging of women is we're seeing the suppression of the man, because we're not, we how we're missing the, we're judging the other. So the woman is judging the man for not being enough, doing enough, whatever. And then that is coming back. And so in our relationships between the masculine and the feminine, because that's all the feminine, the feminist movement is about, is just like the feminine going to war with the masculine, the women going to war against the man, the men. We're really, it's not about women and men. It's about human beings not being able to be at peace with one another. And so we're seeing a huge shift of displacement of men, because the woman has kind of come in thinking, you know, collectively, we're doing all this thing. And then now the man doesn't have a place in the home. The man doesn't have a place in society. Like it's a real challenge for men to know, well, what is my role? That's because we've become so busy trying to figure out who's doing what. Who's going to work? Who's raising children? Who's making the meals? Who's doing what? That's what the war is about, rather than how can we do this together based off what it is that we need in our relationship, and can the woman accept the man? And this is where we see the ebb and the flow of nature playing out, because the woman and the man are two very, very different, what's the word I'm looking for?
I actually think for me, feminism is not feminist against masculine. For me, the feminism is women against women.
I think that's where it's eventuated. I think that's where we've come to now, but that has not been the journey of feminism, but it's definitely where we are struggling now.
It will have always been a conflict of some women wanting one thing and other women wanting another. It will have always had that. It cannot have not had that, because there will not have always been women that wanted to have that change. because it will not always have been all women that will have experienced the same thing. And so it again, it can't have been. There will have always been women who were happy with how things were. Because you wouldn't have everyone experiencing exactly the same thing. There will have always been certain people that were, their life potentially was a different kind of way of being, and they had an acceptance of how it was, in the same way that we have now certain cultures that will live very differently to other cultures. And so it's very interesting. We just continually have the conflict is not external. The conflict is within ourselves, and the conflict that comes out is the conflict from self, the conflict of actually being able to temper the desires that we have based on what it is that we're seeing externally to us. And those desires play out within us, within the different fragmentations of the masculine, the feminine that we see within us. As you were talking, I was just thinking, yeah, I feel ultimately, yes, we can say that men feel that they don't know where their place is, but that isn't true either of all men. And
no, nothing is true of all men, but I think that a movement is a movement because it's based off of a majority mindset.
Yeah,
and the problem that we wind up with that is that whether you want it or not, you end up inheriting that culture. And then what defines the culture? Usually the media is at the heart of it, or how it's represented in our stories, or how it's represented in our institutions, how it's represented, you know, in the systemized way of life. And so the culture becomes, yeah. And it's very interesting because we're seeing right now, we're in the midst of a massive culture shift to do with gender and gender neutrality. It definitely is not what everyone wants. And yet the culture is shifting and the language is shifting and our understanding and perspectives and therefore our behaviors in and of that culture is changing, but it's not necessarily what we agree with. And that's coming as a consequence of the movement, of the feminist movement, and more, and just an evolution of time. It's really interesting. I was watching, I know we're probably going on and on, and I don't know what the time is, but we were watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
The new one.
My kids. No, the original. Mm-hmm. It's on Stan. And so, you know, we grew up with that in the 90s, watching that. I come home from school, like race off the bus and race down the driveway, have enough time to get a cup of Milo and turn The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on. And that was like high school. We're kind of watching it again in my home. And this week there's been two episodes of women giving birth in that show. And the way the woman is represented giving birth just does not make me happy at all. Like, I see that and I think, God, that's so interesting how that is of that era where the woman is in pain and the man is screaming and she's screaming and the baby needs to get out and she needs rescuing and no one's around to save her. Like, and it happened twice, like within this season on this show. And it's just interesting how that is of that time of the 90s, of the representation of the media of the woman. And it is very much not how it is that I see childbirth, how I would like to see a woman in childbirth being portrayed at all. Cultural representations of humans and human behavior is very interesting to think how we've been influenced to believe the way things should be and how we should behave And I just wonder, you know, just because that's not isolated to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, there's very much the epitome of how women were portrayed giving birth in the media and in movies. And has that been helpful to teaching women about this is what this looks like? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do absolutely. And it makes me just, you know, come back to, I think, I don't know where we talked about this, but it's about discernment and the fact that so much of our power is given away. And this is kind of what I was saying at the beginning. So once again, television is a distraction. Do we need to watch a television? Maybe not. But we do because we're bored. And actually, in the distraction, we are being fed a narrative that can very easily take on a belief. And so for me, the stage of life that I'm at now is the process of undoing the beliefs that have been created sometimes from maybe television programs. I can understand that from a point of view of family. You know, my desire for the perfect family was based on I have no idea really. I can't even think of the television program, but it would be a form of television program without a doubt. But equally, it was based on friends who I had who lived a different way, whose parents hadn't divorced and they lived a different type of lifestyle. The point is, it doesn't matter whether it was television or other friends. It doesn't actually matter whether it's television or friends that I could see in real life. The point is, I took something external from me. And I projected that viewpoint and made it a belief on myself, but it wasn't actually true for my scenario. And that's what created the discontent. The discontent comes when we are struggling to have an acceptance of what is. And from the discontent, we create a war within ourselves, which can very easily become a war with others. And that is what we're being shown in this full moon, that there is an inner war. It is occurring because we are not at peace with ourselves and we are not living in a true state of love, absolute love, deep love, not this surface level love, but a scorpionic love. That's a deep love of all things. And without that, there will never be peace. And if we want to find peace as women, we need to get there. It's not about loving the other. Yeah, of course, beautiful. Let's love each other. You're never going to truly love another until you absolutely have the capacity to love yourself. And if we're struggling to actually have a sense of what it is that we feel, we're certainly never going to be able to experience that true state of love.
Well, and that goes back to what you're saying about sovereignty. That is about claiming the sovereignty over your emotions, your mindset, your inner tapestry. And then from there, if you've got that, there is no need to start a movement. We
Well,
don't
that
need.
and point. And also, if you have that, there is actually no reason you would not find yourself needing. This is a very powerful thing to contemplate. You would not need to phone a friend to ask them for their advice. You would not need to consult a wellness specialist about what to do with your body and get conflicting ideas from all around the clock. You would not need to worry about whether the moon was real or whether the moon was a spaceship. You would know. So, and you would not be distracted by these things. I honestly feel the movement is back to simplicity. It doesn't, it's not simple to get there, but it is simplicity. I'm not saying we have to deny progress. I'm not saying that we have to move away. We should, you know, ban mobile phones and all those other things. But there is this element of women have handed over their power, just as you demonstrated with television programs about how women were birthing their babies. Why would we do that? Seriously, why would, you know, why? Why did we, why? 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 Why do we hand our power over to men like that? Yes, of course, I'll listen to you. What the F do they know about having a baby? Nothing. And this is the continuum. And the anger that we feel there, that anger, that is not, that is a collective anger, but it comes from ourselves. And even if you did birth your child the way you wanted to, you would still be angry because there'll be other areas in your life where you've given your power away. And that is what you're remembering. And I think, you know, personally for me, reaching the stage of life that I'm at, and this is, you know, if you're over 40 and you're heading into perimenopause, then you will be angry because the realization comes, oh my gosh, I literally handed my sovereignty over. Now I'm ready to burn the house down. The point is, we have to be very clever because that's not the right way to do this. You don't have to burn anything down external to yourself. You need to take time to repair your relationship with yourself. And that comes from this full moon, actually fully and deeply letting go of these limiting self-beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we're meant to be feeling all this because we're moving, you know, we're moving to, I've got this incense going, it just will not go out. It's like so much smoke in my room, it's ridiculous. I'm trying to put it out. That's why I keep looking distracted, like I'm
It will do that. It's yeah.
it's so
When it
funny.
really when it really gets light, it'll just burn and burn and burn.
What I was thinking just then is that this is, you know, the way that we're moving right now is towards the winter solstice, and we should, you know, really contemplate that we are in the dark. It isn't, I say dark, but we're just in the lull, in the void of the year, for us here, in the southern hemisphere. And so when you're there is nothing really else that we should be doing but deep reflection. And hopefully by the time we've really processed through some of these reflective thoughts, so we practice these inquiries with ourselves, we will actually be ready for the light to return and show us the way,
Yeah, beautiful.
which is coming. And that's coming, I'm just thinking in terms of when the new moon is the next actually solstice.
I'll just consult my almanac
Nice.
and I'll
Do that.
tell you.
That would be good.
So the next new moon is June 18, which is 2 days before or 3 days before the solstice. So that would be very powerful. And on that note, we are going to be announcing and putting on sale this week our brand new, it's not brand new, but we've culminated one of our offerings. All of the solstice and equinox and midpoint gatherings we have now reimagined, and probably actually we've just recognized the evolution of what it is we want to offer, and we will be releasing those as the Home Witch School, which is very cool, and it means that you can join us on each of those gathering points to remember. And to come back to the simplicity of life from your home and from communing with nature and communing with the earth and your life and the cycles that we go through from your home with everything that you need in your home. And it's that real practice of, what was it called? Cottage witch magic. Which is really beautiful. And so we will be teaching that beginning on this winter solstice will be our first Home Witch School gathering. But they are very similar to the gatherings that we've already been having on the solstice and the equinoxes. So if you've been coming to those, they will be the same. It's just been it's just had an evolution of how it will be presented moving forwards, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's just it's been given a recognition for what it is.
Yes.
And
Yes, that's it.
what it is that we believe that finding peace begins from, in your home and the work that you do with your families. And the simplest way to do this is for us to gather and to practice rituals that we can take back to our homes. And that, the term witchcraft has actually distracted us from the true meaning of the craft, which is to be in communion with nature and to work with the tools that we have available to us at the different seasons that will support us in our understanding of ourselves. And in bringing about joy and love and peace to our homes and to our families. And that is always the most important thing. So that's really nice because that's, yeah, so that's really, it's really powerful to contemplate this. The next new moon is just before the winter solstice. And so this period of time now between this full moon and that new moon is this period of release. And so it is very, very important to contemplate which beliefs it is that you want to be releasing and really taking a self inventory so that you can prepare to come into this next period of the year. Yeah, having spent the time in reflection. And so lots of quiet times with ourselves is probably the, yeah, turn things off for a bit.
Go to bed early, with your journal or a book or yourself. Like, it's dark early now. And so use the time in the darkness to, yeah, we don't need, don't try not to, at, and I think that's important, like around this winter solstice period, is like we need to, physiologically, we need to actually allow the body to recognize the light is still dissipating, but we're getting towards the shortest day. And physiologically, for our circadian rhythm, we need that. The body needs the chance to actually recognize the darkness. So be in the dark.
And actually, the best practice, and I might write something about this, would be that we, when I was talking about the end of the day ritual, of actually taking stock of our whole day and doing a redo or releasing any of the emotions that we feel are a bit yucky in our system, this point before the winter solstice and before this new moon is actually an opportunity for us to do that for the previous year. And then we don't have to go back into this next phase with that hanging over us. So how would that be? How would it be to experience a redo or have an opportunity to have a clear slate and then to become very clear on where it is that you are feeling called to serve and bring your unique essence to as we come into this next part of the year. That's just like really, I think it's so, yeah, so simple and yet so powerful. And it does require, I mean, it really does require a commitment to finding time and space in your day. And I can appreciate that for some people that's hard, but I also think we limit ourselves by saying, it's hard, I'm too busy. And we should really just take this time to ask the question, is that true? So there's many ways that that you can support yourself over this time. This has been a really long podcast, so I hope that you've survived it. But that's good too. It's nice to sort of sit and listen and ponder. and contemplate these types of things, and we would love to hear what you think. We really would. So please, yeah, let us know what you think. Look out for, yep, the solstice gathering if you feel that you can come and join us. That's going to be available online in a sort of abridged version, so you can join us anywhere with that as well, which is rather wonderful. Yeah, and we'll have a new moon circle around that next new moon as
And
well.
a Venus gate on the crown,
There's so
which is
much.
actually on the solstice, which is so powerful that and that winter solstice gateway is also the Venus gateway to the crown, which is that full activation of the chakras. It's pretty cool.
And very interesting that we are contemplating all of this when we're in this third eye Venus gateway.
Yes. Yeah. Close your
We
eyes
have,
and
like, we have
see.
to get clear. We have to get clear in order to be ready for activation. So
Yeah.
if you don't start clearing, there's no activate, and I feel like I need to clear the smoke from me.
Okay. All
You
right.
know, I
The mists, it's the mists.
anyway, thank you. That was nice to contemplate all those things and to sit with you and share. We hope
Yeah.
that supported you in some way. Yeah, we look forward to doing it again soon.
But now, take care.
Yeah, have a nice
You
afternoon.
too.
Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you for taking the time to be with us on this podcast episode. These are sound bites and conversations about things we think are important to support the collective ascension towards more love, acceptance, hope, and harmony on the planet Earth. Together, we can continue to support each other through conversations that need to be held. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do share it with your people. We would love it if you subscribe to our channel and even rate the podcast if you feel called to. You can also find us and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Spotify just by searching the 13 Moons Women's Temple.